The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Well, the debate on the regulations enabling the new tiered system is underway in the House of Commons this afternoon. Boris Johnson gave a speech trying to persuade his own MPs to back the measures, which we know are going to pass because Labour has said they will abstain. Katie, just tell us a little bit about what the Prime Minister did to try to at least quell the size of the rebellion from his own MPs.
So we've seen various tactics from Number 10, the Prime Minister. You have the speech today opening the debate, but I think it's been a longer lens approach if you go a bit further back. You had a situation where when the tier system was first introduced, you had good news put out. So the idea, you know, gyms will stay open no matter what tier. And you can see them trying to bank that. But in a way, I think there's been a realisation in recent days that by doing the good news first, everyone took the win. And then when they found out what area their tier was in, they wanted a lot more in the way of concessions. So the Prime Minister is trying to adopt a tone, being quite conciliatory to his colleagues and saying he will listen. You also have the Michael Gove article, however, from the weekend, which I think put the backs up of several Tory MPs. And then I think if you move in terms of, you know, what is being offered, we have a situation where they're saying, you know, if you vote for the tiers today, it's not going to be all the way up until the spring. We are going to bring in other votes, so you will get another one in the new year in terms of this moving into February. So, and I think the question is that enough? And we've also had the publication of the impact assessments, which was supposed to be another bit of saying, you know, we're listening to you, look at these assessments. However, as perhaps we were going to discuss, that has fallen pretty flat because people, and as you've written on Coffee House as well, people looked at those reports and because there doesn't seem to be too much in them, particularly nothing that you can really describe as new, again, it's just got people's backs up more because they think, well, actually, you're insulting our intelligence to publish something which isn't what we asked for. So in terms of the charm offensive by the Prime Minister, for all his, you know, soft words and also talk of duty and so forth, I don't think that this charm offensive is going how Downing Street would like it to be going.
James, do you think it's going so badly as to be pushing the numbers of rebels up?
Yeah, I think that just talking to Tory MPs yesterday, there were some MPs who I would have thought would have sounded off, made their point, and then voted for the government. They seem to have hardened their position yesterday. One of the odd things about this rebellion is that one of the ringleaders of it is Mark Harper, a former government chief whip. And I thought when he came out yesterday saying that the wheels were coming off the government's argument, much more aggressive language than he used to date, I think that was a sign that he thought most of this, very large number of this COVID recovery group started off at 50 strong, has grown to 70 strong, are likely to either abstain or vote against the government. Now, as Katie said, this doesn't really matter because Labour are abstaining, so these measures are going to pass anyway. But, I mean, all Prime Ministers are a bit uncomfortable when enough of their own MPs vote against it for them to have lost their majority. And it is something that is kind of corrosive of a leader's relationship with his parliamentary party if he is relying on either the passivity of the opposition to pass his legislation.
Why did ministers not publish a better impact assessment yesterday, James? It was raised today at Treasury questions and Rishi Sunak very neatly swerved that answer.
Because I think it is very hard to know what the impact of these restrictions are. And I think there is a difference. I think if you think back to March, restaurants had emptied out before the formal lockdown was introduced. And I think in March, it was very easy to say that fear of the virus was the biggest single problem for the economy. I think now it is a slightly more nuanced picture because, you know, certainly in London, when the coming national lockdown was introduced, you saw a kind of spike in restaurant bookings as people went out for one last meal before the restrictions kicked in. And so you can make the argument that Michael Gove does in his Times piece and the Cabinet Office does in their rebuttal of Steerpike's critique of that piece, that, you know, well, this would all change if, you know, the numbers in hospitals started to rapidly increase, people would become much more worried again, and that would have a chilling effect on the economy. But I think making the economic impact assessment is harder, and I think ultimately the government have made a choice. I think it would be inaccurate to think that they are sitting there with finely tuned projections about the economy as they make these decisions. They are essentially have made the decision that they need to protect the NHS. I think one of the things that has surprised the government is I think they hope that the news of the vaccine, the fact there was an end in sight to this, I think they slightly thought that would make people more patient, more prepared to say, okay, we'll accept some restrictions until we can get to a point where normality can return in April. I think the problem Boris Johnson has got is that, you know, as one of the kind of key rebels said to me, is, you know, the Prime Minister has an optimism bias, and there's a feeling that he has told people a few times in this crisis that the end is in sight. Come on, everyone, let's keep going. And so I think until kind of vaccines start going into people's arms, people will be reluctant to believe that the vaccine is going to get us out of this by Easter.
Katie, Keir Starmer has instructed his MPs to abstain on this motion. There's going to be a few Labour rebels, but generally the party seems quite happy with that position.
Yeah, I think it's received a mixed response. We're expecting a rebellion in terms of some Labour MPs. I think the expectation is it's going to be below 20. Obviously, we'll find out the exacts later. I think in terms of Keir Starmer's decision to abstain, I think quite a lot of Labour MPs think that is a fine decision. They're happy to go along with it because they ultimately support having social distancing restrictions in terms of public health. But they query and I think question and in some cases oppose the financial packages that are on offer. And this is a way to almost make that point without being accused of threatening public health. However, I think you're also seeing critics within the Labour Party, which might be more commentators, closer to Jeremy Corbyn, but all members. But there is a faction that do keep pointing out, you know, why does Labour abstain on so many things? And I think that that is more in terms of a general trend. And they think actually the leader of the opposition should be doing more to take firm positions. So I think there is something about how you often don't get a firm position or exactly what Keir Starmer wants to happen, which is a source of frustration to someone on the left. But broadly in speaking of the party, I think it's landing okay. I think just touching what James was saying about, you know, and your question as well about economic reports and so forth, I think what is adding to the problems is the story in the Times today about the fact that there is more precise financial and economic forecast information that's actually being circulated amongst senior figures in government in terms of this dashboard, this mysterious dashboard, which is, you know, flagging which industries, which types of areas, jobs are the most at risk. And I think also you combine that with the fact that if you look at several and several reports saying the same thing in terms of the cabinet about which areas go into which tiers. One of the figures that came up when we understand Michael Gove was pushing for London to go into tier three, one of the reasons London didn't go into tier three was because they said the number of jobs that would put at risk, I think, was around 500,000. So there clearly is data out there. That's what you keep hearing from Tory MPs, you know. It's not just as though there is nothing. They think there is some information that's not being given to them. And I think that's adding to this sense of not, I suppose, paranoia, but just this general sense of distrust, which you've had since early on in the crisis, that Downing Street does not think MPs are worth giving the full information to.
And the SNP won't be voting in tonight's debate, but they did offer their view just for what it's worth. Nicola Sturgeon has also been announcing that she wants to give every NHS and social care worker in Scotland a £500 COVID bonus, and she wants Boris Johnson to make the payment tax-free. James, what's she up to?
This is classic clever politics, right? Who is against a bonus for NHS workers after the year they've had? By demanding that the UK Treasury make it tax-free, she gets a kind of constitutional point about the things that Scotland could only do if it was independent. I actually think this is very bad policy. It's very bad policy, I think, for several reasons. One is that there is no means test in this. So NHS surgeons who earn large amounts of money comfortably in the, you know, top 5% of earners in Scotland will get this bonus and get it tax-free. I think it's another reminder of how the SNP do use universalism. Just look at the free tuition fees in Scotland as a kind of form of middle class welfare. I also think it's kind of classic virtue signalling, you know, the SNP, we value the NHS, we didn't just clap for carers, we're giving them money. But I think at a time when the unemployment rate in wider society is likely to spike up, giving a bonus to people with great job security, some of whom are on very generous wages, I'm obviously not talking about hospital porters or newly qualified nurses, but I'm, you know, talking about, you know, NHS consultants do earn a very decent amount of money. But it is classic Sturgeonite policies. It's fine an issue where you can drive a moral, political and kind of constitutional wedge between the Edinburgh government and London.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie, and thank you for listening.